Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
So he'd have better options. All right, we'll go ahead, and I know we've got some people that are still coming, but I want to go ahead and get started. I do want to tell you that we are recording both of these sessions, and so we should have those up on our website. You can call if you want to get some CDs of them. You can call our church office, and we can make those available to you. I think if you listened during that last session, you could probably tell why we're so excited to have David come and speak to us. And it's just really a blessing. Other than my father, as far as ministry goes, he's been one of the greatest mentors in my life personally. And so this is just really going to be a blessing for us. We're going to have one more session. We'll probably try to end at 8, a little after. And then we've got, I think you saw where our kids are. We've got our third grade and up in the fellowship hall. And then all of our others are down in the preschool hallway. And so after that, you can pick them up there. Tomorrow is our family day. Andy and Marlon Conley are going to be with us and talking about, from different perspectives, some of the challenges facing Christian families. So we want to invite you to that, too, to be with us for that day. But now I'll turn it over to David. Let David speak to us.
What a day you guys have lined up tomorrow with the Conleys. That'll be a great day. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Think about that idea of train up a child. How do you train? You know, when I find out about the idea of even talking about training, is I find out that it is much harder to describe sometimes what it is than it is to see when it hasn't taken place. You know, if you're at your workplace and there's a person that hasn't been trained, they stand out like a sore thumb, right? You go to a fast food restaurant, the cashier, he or she has not been trained. Do you know it? Man, from the staring at the boards, you know, to your food being all wrong. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Like, it is so obvious when there's been a lack of training. How would you feel if you looked at somebody else's dog and their dog was well trained? You know, they said sit and it sat, and they said stay and it stayed, and they said lay down and lay down, and you took it on a little walk and it just stayed right beside you. And you said, wow, I want my dog to be like that. So you call a dog trainer and say, can you train my dog to be like that? Dog trainer says, sure, I can train your dog to be like that. $350, let me keep it a few weeks, and I'll have your dog like that. And you say, hey, that's a lot of money, but I want a dog like that. So you go, you pay the $350, you show back up 2 or 3 weeks later to pick up your dog. You're all excited. You can't wait for that little dog that's going to just do whatever you tell it to do. And so you go to the guy's place of business or his house or wherever it is, and he sees you drive up, and he comes out the door, and your little dog just pew, right out the door, circles the yard, and the whole time he's saying, hey, come back, come back, come back. And the dog's just going crazy, circling the yard. And you're like, that doesn't look right. And he comes up to you as the dog is still going crazy. He says, hey, I loved your little dog. That was just the cutest, look, best personality, sweet dog. You know, and that dog is very smart. Hey, come here, get out of the road. I tell you what, your little dog, I found out the exact kind of little treats they like. I gave him a little treat all the time. And I found out they like to just run outside a lot. So I just let your little dog run outside a lot. Listen, I just want you to know I had the best time these 3 weeks with your little dog, and I appreciate you doing business. You're like, wait a minute. My little dog isn't going to come and sit beside me? No, I didn't figure you'd mind. I mean, because after all, I was very gentle with your dog. And I was very kind to your dog. And I gave your dog everything they want. Did you notice the new collar I put on? I even have a little sweater I put on your dog in the mornings when it's cool. Listen, your little dog could not have been happier for the 3 weeks that he was here. You understand that, right? No, I wanted my dog to be trained. I wanted my dog to sit when it's supposed to sit. And I wanted it to roll over when it's supposed to roll over. And if it's able to stay, I want it to stay. That's why I pay you $350. Isn't it interesting that when we think about training and dogs, it's real clear to us what training is. And then we read in the Bible, train up a child. And all of a sudden, very intelligent people start to go foggy. I don't know exactly what trained means. I don't know. And it's the same kid that is yelling at their, it's the same parent that's yelling at their kid all through Walmart. Put that down. Put that up. Come here. Come here. How many times have I told you? Stop. 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 It's real clear when a child has been trained, and it's real clear when a child has not been trained. And training should begin at such a young age that you can't even reason with them. Training begins before a child is able to reason. Training is about conditioning in the early stages. And as they get older, it becomes more logical. And it becomes, even as they step up a little bit older, it becomes not about, hey, this is what mom and dad wants. During those adolescent years, well, really before those adolescent years, but heavy in those adolescent years, it's not about what mom and dad wants. It's about what God wants. And so you talk with your kid about, here's what God wants. Here's what God expects. And so that's the way we all live in this house. We're all trained that way. We're all conditioned that way. And you're a part of this house, and that's the way we live. And so, when we think about this, I'd like for you to think about this particular lesson right here really has kind of some random things. They're not in like a chronological order coming through their life, and they're things that some of them will be a lot easier to apply when they're younger and maybe older. But I just pulled out some highlights of some various lessons, if you will, and try to put them in to hope that maybe there's something in here that you would look at and say, you know what, that's something I can do better with my kid, and that's why I'm here tonight, is I want to be better as a parent. And so let's think about some of these things. Number one, let's go to that very aspect that children are conditioned. You know, I don't know how that hits you. Most people don't like their kid being compared to a dog, so you're probably already not liking it. But the very reality is still that children need to begin obeying at a very young age. And so, and it's too young to reason with them. What's the first thing a child ought to learn? What?
No.
No. By far. And a child needs to know what no means, and a child needs to know that when no is said, that's what is meant, and if you don't, there's consequences for not obeying. And so it's real simple. Now, a child learns what no is way before they're able to understand why they're not able to do what they're about to do. They don't understand why they can't pull something off on top of them from the table, but they still are told no. And if they've been trained to obey, they're told no. They pull their hand back down and it doesn't come on top of their head. Now, if they haven't been trained, no, they're told no, and they pull it down on top of their head, and now their life has become harder. And whose fault is it? And the life of the parents has become harder. And so it's kind of like this vicious cycle that we create if we're not careful in this cycle of life. I want you to think about, and I realize, with three kids, I realize kids' personalities are so different. And probably if my wife and I would stop at the first kid, we would have thought we were awesome parents. And then God gave us a second child that was very strong-willed. And then God gave us a third child that's just real different. And so you take all this and you know, you realize that parenting has a lot of challenges to it. So what I'm going to say to you are some blanket statements, and I realize that part of what I'm going to say is not easy. I realize part of it is something that we won't master point in time, but it'll be much more about the journey. You know, if you would have said to me with our first child, hey, how do you get a child to sit quiet during church? You guys are amazing. Your child is always quiet. I said, hey, I can tell you, do this, you do this, you do this, and it just works. Then God gave us a second child that we literally had Civil War, World War III, Vietnam, and everything, every Sunday night, and for the short Wednesday night devotional for 4 years. 4 years. You know, you're just ready to pull your hair out. Like, how can we go through this three times a week and you still not get it? But the reality is, to that I just say, don't quit. The victory grows to the one who doesn't quit. And so as a parent, you got to be the one that has more stamina than the kid has. And so let's think about some of these things. What would you do And I'm not asking you to answer this out loud. I'm just giving you something to think about. What about if the only training you ever did was correcting and discipline in the sense now the wrong has already been done? Why not create training opportunities? If you don't want your kids, I did this for a selfish reason, but I figured if it made all of us happy, we'd all be happier, right? So I never let my kids play with my keys or my wallet. It didn't matter if they were laying in their reach, they were not allowed to touch them. And so my child was able to crawl. I laid the keys and wallet on the table, on the coffee table. Crawled over to him, he started dressing up. You know, he's starting to learn no a little bit. He looks at me, gets a little spat on the hand. No. So we just went through some exercises of it. After a little bit of time, he'd see my keys, my wallet laying around. He wouldn't touch them. Now, do you think a good parent would really leave something in reach that you're not supposed to be able to touch? Where was that tree in Genesis? The second, third chapter? Doesn't the word midst come into description of that tree? Think about it. God, you're telling me there's only one tree we can't eat of the fruit. That's right. And where is that? Oh, I put it on the back far side of the garden. You'll probably never even see that tree. God says, oh no, it'd be easy to see. It's the one right there in the middle of the garden. For real. Yeah. That tree right in the middle of the garden. That if you really stop and study it over, it looks good to eat. That's what he said. It looks really good. And that one right there in the middle, I don't want you to eat. Sounds like me, God was training. If he didn't want them to learn to obey, he wouldn't even put the tree in the garden. Or he would tuck it way off in the corner of the garden. But he put it right there in the middle. And then he held them responsible. He gave them positive instruction first. Hey, I don't want you touching this. Or don't want you eating this. And then he held them responsible when they did. I think about the story that I heard about, and I'm sure this has happened many, many times over. I'm sure this isn't unique. But I think about the woman that somebody was complimenting her one day, and then about how her children behaved in church, and then asked her, said, how do you do it? And she said, well, a couple times a week, we get our kitchen chairs and we line them up in a row. And said, for about 20 or 30 minutes, me and the kids sit in them. And we talk about how we're going to act in church, and we use quiet voices. If anything has to be said, it's a whisper. They're not allowed to put their feet on the floor during that period of time. And we talk about what they're going to do during the periods of time. And you know, I know all of you have your little tricks. I think about the two little boys that sometimes sit next to me. Not right next to me, but in the general vicinity where we sit a lot of time on Sunday mornings. And they get so excited when it's time for preaching. And it's because that's the first time they get snacks. And they got the little quiet snacks. But see, their parents have trained them. During this time, you're going to do this. And as they've gotten a little bit older, they told them now during the prayer, you're not going to do anything. You're going to close your eyes and pray. They got a little bit older now. Remember that journey? We're talking about there's different things. There's always the adjustments. Okay, now you've gotten a little bit older. Now you can pray during the prayer. And I'll tell you what, during the sermon, that long, dry preacher, you can eat, all right? And have a good time eating. And so we think about the mother that says, well, we get chairs out and we sit in them and we talk about this is how we'll act in church. That's training. What do you do to train your child for something that's coming up? I think about my mother. Whenever I was young and we were going to have company, I had one sister. And we laugh now. We say it was really her laying down the law. But she would train us. She would say, "All right, Dave, when the company shows up tonight, I want you to be standing in the front door watching for them. When they get there, I want you to go out and open the doors for the ladies. Their car doors? Yes. For real? Yes. Okay. Tell them you're glad they're here. Show them in the front door. Okay. And then we had this feel about how we acted at the table. Don't talk too much. Don't interrupt. Don't put your elbows on the table. What was all that period of time? It was training. See, it could have been that we did it all wrong and then it'd be all correction. But instead, it's like, hey, this is what you have coming up. This is what is expected of you. And so, again, when we see a dog that's trained, we immediately say, wow, somebody has worked with that dog. But you know what? We admire a lot more kids that have been trained. The weird thing is, it doesn't calculate with us. They've been trained. You know what we say? Those are just good kids. Well, they are. But you know what? the bad kids are good kids too if they have good parents. And so it comes back to who's going to take the time to say, wow, we have a responsibility here. We're about to go into a situation and we don't want to set our kids up for failure. We want to condition them. We want to train them. We want to give them a heads up of what's coming and help them try to be prepared for it. And so that would be one thing that I would urge you to think about. Now, I mentioned to you before, consistency is huge. Consistency is huge. I think about the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, let your yeses be yes and your noes be noes. And notice, he doesn't have a little asterisk there with a disclaimer that says, unless you're talking to your children and you can lie to them all you want. Right? I mean, if you tell your child, hey, this is what I expect you to do, do you really expect them to do that? Or once they don't do it, they're off the hook. And so we really have to think about ourselves as parents. Are we consistent? Are we honest with our children? Okay, a second thing here is please, if you've got anything heavy, and if you're like, don't throw anything at me on this, but could I just speak real clear? And just hear me out on this, and you're going to agree, even if you don't like me when I get done. It may take you a week or two, but you'll agree with this in time, all right? Don't throw anything. If you have, I'm just going to say it in a way that'll help you, all right? Because I don't have to live with you every week, all right? All right, listen. If you have a child that whines, you have trained your child to whine. There's not many exceptions to that. All right, so if you've got a whiner in your family, you have chosen to have a family as whine. And you may be married. You may be a whiner yourself. You may be married to one. They may have gotten honest. Because keep in mind, it's conditioning. It's conditioning. It's training. And so maybe by your very behavior, you've trained them to whine. But here's something real simple that I want to challenge you to do. Because again, and I mean, I'm not the first one that ever said this. I don't know who it was, but I love the saying, raise kids that you like. Raise kids that whenever you invite somebody to go to a restaurant with you, they don't say, man, if they're bringing their kids, I'm not going. You know, raise kids that other people like. And I haven't met anybody yet that says, man, I love whining kids. You know, parents don't even like to be around their whining kids. They don't. They love to have a babysitter so they can go out and get away from the whining. And so what about this? What about if starting tonight, your child gets punished when they whine, and they absolutely, over your dead body, would never get what they're asking for when they whine? It probably won't take more than a week or two to just stop whining. They don't ever get what they're asking for. Ever when they're whining. And it doesn't matter if it's something they need. They're going to do without it if they're whining. Here's a typical whining scenario in a family that's trained their kids to whine. And you know, mom or dad whines on the phone, and the baby comes up, toddles up, the little toddler comes up with her sippy cup and says, I want some juice. You know, on the phone says, no, I'm not going to get you juice. Go on back and finish your DVD. And talks on the phone some more, and the little toddler comes back like just 30 seconds later and has done what they've been taught to do. Come on, I want some juice! And they say, and you're on the phone, and you're frustrated. You've been interrupted already twice in 30 seconds. And you're like, no, watch the DVD. And so the kid goes back, and the kid knows what they have to do. And so the kid stays in there just a minute, and the kid comes back, this time with tears in their eyes. And now they're crying, and saying, I want my juice! That's all I want, my juice! And now they're yelling, and now they're about to hit the floor, and they're turning around. And so here's the typical thing. So you take the phone, you lay it down, hold on just a minute. I told you I was on the phone, give me that cup. I am not going to get you juice. Listen, next time you do this, no juice for you. Now go. And the kid's like, yeah, got my juice. And so the next time the kid wants juice, they just got to figure out what mood you're in. If you're in a good mood, they get juice the first time they ask. And if you're in a bad mood to them, a bad mood, they've got to ask three or four times and whine louder every time they ask. And so they come in there. They know. They know what time it is. They know if it's the time that they got to be sent back one more time or if it's the time they get it that time based upon your pattern that you have trained. Because keep in mind, not only do you train kids to be good, you train kids to be bad. Kids are trained. All right, so like in that first analogy, if I talk about dog training, you're like, I don't
like him talking about my kids like that. My kids aren't trained. Your kids are trained. What they do, they've been conditioned to do that, whether it's good or if it's bad.
They've been conditioned to do that. So how about setting an idea, a standard that says we're not going to train our kid to whine. And when you stop rewarding whining, it'll probably stop. But if it doesn't stop, like within the first few days, just start punishing. Say, hey, we're not going to whine. We're not going to cry with things like that. Go to your room, 15 minutes. I'll let you know. And when they start whining about that, say, it just went 30 minutes ago. And let your yes be yes and your no, no. And train them that that's unacceptable. All right, this bleeds over into the same kind of principle we were just talking about, number three. Do train them to obey. We've already talked about the fact that in the Garden of Eden, that tree was put right in the midst, and God was teaching them about obedience. He told them clearly beforehand that they were not to eat of that. And when he came down, think about it. If there is anybody in this world, and I really mean this, I'm not trying to be cute, if there's anybody in this world that deserved a warning, it would have been Adam and Eve, in my opinion. They didn't have any history to pull off of to be like, wow, I didn't know it was going to be that big a deal to eat this fruit. I mean, you know, if there was anybody that deserves, hey, I tell you what, that's warning number one. I told you not to eat of it. You ate of it. That really disappoints me. And listen, don't do it again. You're not going to do it again. In my opinion, they deserve a warning if anybody did. But God was consistent. And God held them accountable for the wrong. And which, by the way, if you want to do a study on grace, that's why we need grace so much. It's because God is consistent in punishing wrong. If He wasn't, He would be partial. There's no partiality with God. And so it didn't matter if you're Adam and Eve, the first man and woman, or if you're you and I, however many hundreds of billions there have been, we're all held responsible. So now we look at this and say, all right, how does this apply to our children? Okay, you may have thought about this before. If you haven't, I'm just throwing this out, and I'm trying real hard to not be like just opinionated, because we all have opinions about the way we ought to raise our kids, and I'm trying real hard not to throw out things that are basic principles that would come from the Word of God, therefore hard to argue with. There is no room in God's Word for continual warnings. All right? And I believe the reason why that is so important is because continual warnings are opportunities to disobey. A warning, when it is done continually, is saying to your child, look, I expect you to obey always on the third time. In other words, go ahead and disobey the first time. Go ahead and disobey the second time. And the truth is, when we say the third time, in most parents, the way they train, it's really the fourth time. Because what they'll do is they'll tell their child to do something. Their child doesn't do it. So then they'll say, one. You say, really, that one's the second. Because you've already told them once and they didn't do it. And now you're counting. One. Two. Well, now they've already disobeyed three times. Three. And then the kid may get up and do it. Well, by that time, what we have done as parents is we have taught them to disobey three times before you obey. I don't think God could be pleased with that. Truth is, I don't think we as parents want kids that way. You get to make the decision because you're the parents. But do you want kids that you have to try to coerce into obeying? Or do you want kids that have been trained to obey? I want to give you, like, just an example. Around our table, when our kids were younger, and, you know, we'd have guests pretty often around our table. I remember one time looking at, I think it's my strong-willed daughter, and I was looking at her, and she was doing something, and I went, and she looked me right in the eye, and she went ahead and did it. And so right after the company was gone, I said, hey, we need to talk. And I said, you know what you did when we were eating? She said, what? And I explained it. She said, I didn't disobey. And I said, what do you mean by that? She said, you never said anything. And I said, did you know what I meant when I gave you that look? And she said, yeah. I said, did I say something?
And I said, listen, you better start learning looks, because you're going to get the same punishment with the look as you are with the words. And it'll start tonight. You get to decide how many warnings you want to give and how many games you want to play with your kids. And again, I promise you guys, I'm not trying to put myself on pedestal. I'm just trying to give you that idea. What do you want here? Well, there were some things I didn't just want there. There were some things when I took my 3-year-old to a restaurant that I wanted at 3. I didn't want it to be a food fight. And I didn't want it to be a battle. And so I did things when they were 2 at home so that we would be ready to go to a restaurant at 3. And you get to decide that. You get to decide what... And man, it didn't always go this way, especially with that strong willed one. But I loved with the odds being in my favor when we were at a restaurant with a bunch of people, and my kid was 8 people down with all the other kids, and something's about to happen, to be able to look them in the eye and say, and knew it was going to stop. That's a rule of thumb. I love that. You get to make... That's not going to happen without what? Training. Consistency. Expectations. And the simple thing that says, and this is out of this section, this will be one of the most important things we say. You decide whether or not you expect your children to obey. That's simple. You decide. Do you really expect them to obey the first time? Hey, it's time to eat. Go ahead, turn the video game off. Come in here to eat. What does that mean in your house? I'm not trying to throw rocks at you. I'm just trying to convict you. What does that mean in your house? I'm not asking you to answer out loud. What does that mean? Does that mean that when you say that alone, the game's going off and people are walking toward the table? Or does that mean in 3 or 4 minutes you're going to have to go in there and say, hey, I said it's time to eat. Come on and eat. Knowing that, that's still not going to do it. Then you're going to have to start, hey, 1, 2, 3, come on. It's going to get cold. Do you want to eat cold food? Now notice what we're doing. Now we're negotiating with our children. You're the authority. There's no room for negotiation. None. You don't ask for obedience, and you don't negotiate obedience. You have stopped being the parents when those two things happen. You get to decide if your child obeys. If your child is on up in years, they got an earthquake coming over the next few days, but they'll get over it in a month or two. And it'll be a neat adjustment in your family's life once they recognize who the parents are, who the authority is, and that there's going to be consistency in that. And that becomes the workload on you. Now you have to be consistent. And you know what? When's the hardest time to be consistent as a parent? At the end of the day. Not really. Those are times we'll download on them in a heartbeat. The hardest time to be consistent as a parent is when you are having the best day of your life. Man, you're feeling good. You just gotten a huge promotion. You're in from work. And the child disobeys and you're like, I'm not going to see that. I'm feeling good. I'm going up. And you got to decide. Man, I don't want to stop right now and have to go through this. Because if you're going to be consistent, it means I'm going to hold you accountable every time. Now, let me throw this in. This is huge. What I'm talking about, I give you, this is a big opinion right here. But because of what I'm talking about, I chose to not have a lot of rules in my house. Because my intention was to make them obey every one of them. We had a lot of principles. And the rules were not nearly as many. But whatever was the rule, that was law. And the principles that we lived by, they were real important, and we talked about those a lot, and we guided with those. We steered with those. Hey, and if this is rule in your house, I'm all for you. I'm just giving you opinion. I didn't want a rule in my house. You can't eat in the living room. But I didn't want to fight that fight. It wasn't worth it to me. I'd buy a new carpet when they get over. I'm buying a new couch when they get older. Now, if that's that big to you, have that rule. But I'm just saying, if you are going to enforce every rule you make, then you're a bad parent if you don't. Is that simple? good parents enforce every rule that they make. Therefore, you might want to be real careful how many rules you make. Because if you make 100 rules, you're going to have a lot of bad days. And your kids will have a lot of bad days. But then you've got those principles. You've got those broad principles that are huge, where you're constantly urging them, just that list of things that Andrew has over there, you're constantly urging them to be faithful. You're constantly urging them to be have work ethic. You're constantly urging them to be responsible. You demand respect. But see, even within respect, perfect example. My daughter, my junior, and she is a sweetie pie. When I said she's different a while ago, she is different. But she saw this earlier today. And I was studying this over, and she said, "Dad, what's that?" And we had a talk about it. She looks me in the eye and she said, "I know I'm the third kid. And I want to guess it's easier to let up on the third kid. Don't let up on me. I want to be a good kid." And I said, "I'm glad you brought that up. Because you know what? We do have to work on." She kind of gave me one of those looks. And it was good. It wasn't bad. But she just gave me one of those looks. I said, "Lately you've been a little bit disrespectful when I ask you questions. Your answer has been a lot more like you talk to your brother or sister than like you talk to a mother or father." And she kind of started nodding her head. I said, "Let's work on that." And she said, "We'll work on that." See, I didn't lay down hard, fast rules. The next time you talk to me like that, it's going to be this, this, this. Now, it might come to that. It might come to that. But right now, I want it to be more of a guiding principle than a hard, fast rule that you're going to be grounded from driving the next week because we've got to take her seat. No, I'm just kidding. But real important there. We decide. Let me give you one more illustration on that, and then we've got to move on here. Like when Tennessee Wildlife says, and I'm not a fisherman, so let me just make up something. What if they talk about a particular fish and they say in that lake or here in Tennessee you can only catch 5 of those a day? Are they trying to get you not to fish? No. They're encouraging you to fish, but the first fish you catch is a warning. Hey, you can only catch 4 more, so enjoy them. You catch a second one, you got a warning. You can only catch 3 more, so enjoy it. Listen, warnings are encouragement to continue something. So when you warn your children, you are encouraging them to continue what they're doing until that final warning. So I just want to challenge you to make your life a lot better, and your teachers will probably come back, and your kids' teachers will come back and thank you too. Because you'll go to parent-teacher conference one day and they'll be like, "Man, they obey so good. Thank you so much." Because most parents don't know how to deal with a kid that obeys the first time. Most teachers don't. All right. All right, we talked a little bit in the previous one about training to work. This, to me, this is a big one because work is something that they're going to be doing the rest of their life, odds are. And it's also something that is real important. God says if a person shouldn't work, neither should they eat in Thessalonians. And you notice there's no asterisk beside that that says unless you're a kid. I think that's intended for everybody. People find their worth in the ability that they are producers. You talk to any kid that's been a couch potato. You go to an eighth grader that's been a couch potato all summer, and you ask them about their summer, and you ask a kid that has had a summer job and has worked hard, and they saved money, and they bought some things that they really wanted, and you ask them about their summer, and you're going to get 2 different reports. Because we are designed to want to produce. And so I would encourage you to teach your children that work is a blessing. And that keep in mind, a lot of times people go to the punishment in Genesis 3. It was the increased effort that work was that was the curse. If you go back before the sin in Genesis 2, Adam had a job before he sinned. And if you go back and read it, it says his job was to tend the garden. If any of you have ever gardened, been in agriculture, it's work to keep a garden nice. He had a job in the perfect world. I'm not going to be surprised if we get to heaven and we don't have work. That's a big opinion right there. But the idea is work is not a curse. Work is a blessing. And so are we going to teach our children
to work. All right, here we are back at the beginning of their life. We want them to be responsible. We want them to be financially independent. We want them to be able to get a job and keep it. Who's going to teach them to work? Young ages, they need to have chores. Young ages, moms, dads, you ought not be the ones cleaning off the table. You don't need to be the ones loading the dishwasher. You don't need to be the ones sweeping the kitchen floor. That needs to be their job. That needs to be what they do every night when they get up from supper. When they get a little bit older, they need to be the ones mowing the yard. They need to be the ones cleaning the cars. They need to be the one of them vacuuming, one of them dusting every week. They need to be the ones learning responsibility. It is a privilege to be a part of this family, and with that privilege comes great responsibility. We all work together in this family. Who's going to do the laundry this week? Who's going to do this week? Those are the things so that when they do start having an after-school job or they have a summer job, all right, those jobs are not the responsibility to teach Christian young people how to work. You've done the wrong thing if a supervisor at McDonald's has to teach your child how to work. You're supposed to be the one that teaches your child how to work. And when they show up for their summer job, what you ought to be hearing is, man, they are great workers. They're responsible. Thank you so much for letting them work here. It's been a blessing. And that's our job. That's our job as parents. Okay, we've already mentioned number five, training to come when called. We can throw out number six. You also train them where to sleep. I would not suggest between mom and dad. I wouldn't suggest even in mom and dad's room. Everybody to each their own. But if you're thinking my kid would have it no other way, all it takes of most kids is three consistent nights. And if that doesn't work, you've got a strong will when it might take a week. But you decide. And all you have to do, I wish that we had more time. I could tell you a long, hilarious story on this. My wife and I had a huge disagreement, but she had this pediatrician she just loved. He hung the moon. And it's like, how are we going to stop him from coming in here? I said, we just close his door. He can't reach the doorknob. Exactly. He's going to stand there in the middle of the night and cry. Exactly. Well, he'll probably just lay there beside the door and sleep the rest of the night. Exactly. And I said, he won't do that more than three or four nights. And he'll decide he'd rather sleep in his bed than on the floor. She said, oh, she was mad. She was mad. And I said, hey, just go ask your pediatrician. Ask him what he would do. She said, I will do that. So she went and she said, how do we keep our child from coming in and getting in bed with us? Close his door. And so she goes through with him and said, well, but he'll just start screaming. And said, oh, it won't take more than three nights. He'll stay in his bed. Sure enough, the third night, slept all night. Again, training. We train them to come to our room or we train them not to come to our room. And then we get to decide, because keep in mind, God first, marriage second, children third. Children do not belong on the level of the marriage. All right, let's close with this point. As much as we love our children, and I hope you love them so much you couldn't even put into words how much you love them. It's the most unique relationship we ever share in this earth. We're so close to them, but yet God gives them to us with the design for them to leave. If I were to not say that, and I were to say to you, when's the first time parenting is mentioned in the Bible? Probably none of you would say Genesis 2. Most of you, if I would say, when's the first time parenting is mentioned in the Bible? Most of you would probably say Genesis 4. We start reading about Cain and Abel. Genesis 2. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, parents. But wait a minute. This is the first time it's mentioned. God, what do you want us to see? I want you to see this is a temporary arrangement. They're with you for about 18 to 22 years. And they leave. They're not going to live with you anymore if everything goes right. They leave. Are you raising them to leave? They do not belong on the level of the husband and wife in your home. God, spouse, children, in 18 to 20 years, they're gone. I'm not talking about gone from your heart. I'm not talking about gone from your life. But they're gone from your home. And they start another home. And that home is more important to them than this home, according to God's plan. That's why I use the word lead. And so, if we do our task right, we begin with the end in mind. And in this arena, the end is, I want them to be ready to lead.
So I hope that we can honor God
by the way that we raise our children. And I hope that those mountain peaks of great joy that children bring in our lives can just be a continual mountain peak throughout our life. It's been a pleasure being with you tonight, and I thank you for it.
Well, I think you're like me. You appreciate David taking the time to be here. Also, again, thank you for coming. I do want to point out just our crew that we have putting together an awesome meal. Annette and Valerie got the food going for us. We had a great grill team, Lee and Roger and Darren, and then Charles Smith helped out as well. And we just had a lot of people that were putting that together, so we're thankful for that. Chris got the inflatables set up, and I don't know if the night would have been complete without seeing Wendell go down the big slide. So I think that was something that's awesome for all of us. And our babysitters, you want to make sure that you thank them. I appreciate you guys being here. Let's close with a word of prayer, and then we'll be dismissed. Our Father in Heaven, we thank you so much for the opportunity to serve you. And we thank you for your design of the family. And we're grateful for the words that David has shared with us. Father, we know that this task is not an easy one, and it's not a simple one. But at the same time, you will guide us, and that if we seek to serve you, we will seek to model your love, we will seek to model your consistency, and we will always seek what's best for our children. And we know that's a heavy responsibility. And I pray that you be with all of us as we leave here tonight, and as we look at our actions as parents and think of ways that we want to improve and that we want to do better. And I pray you be with all of our families and help us always to honor you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.